You might be forgiven if you walk right past the glass case they're displayed in at the Vatican's observatory in the hills outside Rome. That's what I did on a recent visit to the stargazing facility at the Pope's summer residence in Castel Gandolfo. I was there to find out more about the Vatican Observatory's summer program for young astronomers, but I took an unexpected detour. At first glance, they look like some of the volcanic stones you can pick up just down the hill along the beach of Lake Albano, formed in the crater of an extinct volcano. But as I walked by the display case, Jesuit astronomer Guy Consolomagno grabbed me by the arm and pointed enthusiastically to the series of gray, brown, red, yellow, and black stones contained inside. "Just look at these babies," was written all over his face as he eagerly told me I was looking at one of the largest collections of meteorites in the world, and he's in charge of it. The Vatican Observatory collection contains more than 1,000 pieces from nearly 500 different meteorite falls. Consolomagno gave me a fast-track history, explaining a large part of the collection came to the Vatican in a series of donations from Adrien Charles, the Marquis de Moroy.
He was a French gentleman scientist of the 19th century. He got these meteorites the old-fashioned way. He bought them. He bought them from dealers who were in the 19th century going around to any region where there was a lot of farmland, so the farmers would be out plowing the fields, and no mountains nearby. So whenever they encountered a rock that wasn't there before, odds were pretty good it was a meteorite.
Look at that one. My goodness, it has yellow.
It's a marvelous thing. They're called palisites. It's a mixture of metal, iron and nickel, that has been melted and then crystallized. And mixed in with it are these beautiful big crystals of olivine. Peridot, people know that as the jewel. And the fascinating thing, of course, is not only it's so beautiful because the olivines are translucent, you can see the light through them, but also just the fact that you have these two different kinds of crystals, both molten, both crystallized, and yet they did not separate, even though the metal is much denser than the rock, tells you that this crystallizing occurred someplace where there was very little gravity. It probably was in the center of a small body that was eventually completely shattered, broken apart.
This other one over here looks really unusual. What is this one? It's Mundrabila.
Mundrabila, and we have some of the very large and odd iron meteorites. What's mixed in with that is mostly sulfide materials. That's probably not all that different from what the center of the Earth would look like. We believe that the core of the Earth is made out of iron and sulfur together. And you can see in some of these meteorites, even Sacramento Mountains up there, you see the crystals of iron and nickel, but then there's this large round blob of sulfide mixed in with it. It's simply because we have these pieces of a planet that's been broken apart, a very small planet, that we can extrapolate to what our planet must be like in the interior. You know, we haven't broken apart our planet, at least not yet. Mm-hmm. So this is the best way.
But have you come across substances which were completely unknown to scientists?
Not completely unknown. What we have instead are minerals that are exceedingly rare on the surface of the Earth, but fairly common in meteorites, or combinations. I mean, we have plenty of iron on the surface of the Earth, but it's all oxidized. In meteorites, it's all metallic, and it's rich in nickel, which is what you don't normally see. Let me give you a piece of this fellow here, one of the larger samples, because this comes from Arizona, and it was found in the desert outside of Meteor Crater.
This
is a lump of iron, part of the 500,000 tons of iron that hit the desert of Arizona some 50,000 years ago and made Meteor Crater. Now, most of it exploded and vaporized, and it's not there anymore. It's just little shards on the outside that flew. So you don't find this in the center of the crater. You find this in the desert outside the crater.
Wow. That's a pretty big piece. That must be almost 12 inches.
It is. It's about 12 pounds, and it's, you know, maybe a foot by a quarter, 4 to 5 inches across. It's irregular because, of course, as it exploded, it also was flying through the air, the pieces afterwards, and bits would be melted away. So you get this sort of scalloped surface to it.
So don't tell me that it
It was part of the meteorite that fell down here and made this enormous hole. How big is that?
That crater is about in kilometers. I'll translate
Albano
to
Lake. Albano Lake.
It's about the size. It's not quite as big as Albano Lake. And I know the difference because in Lake Albano, we can have airplanes come in and scoop water out. But there was a fellow who tried to fly into the center of that crater, and he couldn't get out because it's just too small. It's a couple of miles across. But you can go there, you know, as a tourist and stand across and see to the other side.
See that hole there?
This is about all that's left of 500,000 tons, 50,000 years ago, and probably 50 meters across.
You know, everybody always wonders what happens if another meteorite hits the Earth like that.
Well, meteorites hit the Earth at the rate of about 12,000 every year.
Goodness.
Because we can tell just from seeing how bright we get meteors, and even brighter ones you can extrapolate from there. Also, spy satellites that were originally looking for nuclear tests instead discovered a lot of rocks hitting the top of our atmosphere. Now, the 12,000 that hit, of course, most of them hit the oceans. Most of them hit uninhabited areas. We're lucky if we can get 5 or 10 meteorites, new meteorites, every year. So the odds of getting hit are pretty slim. And yet, every year or so, somebody's house or somebody's car will get hit by a meteorite. Over here, you can see a
but
picture.
But they're usually much smaller than,
well,
than what hit the
usually. Desert. What usually happens, of course, the iron ones stay together as large rocks, so the big craters are formed by the iron ones. A stony meteorite, when it hits, will break into smaller bits so that they can actually survive and hit the surface of the Earth. You can see pictures we have over here of a car in Peekskill, New York, that was hit by a meteorite in 1992. And you can see it made a big hole in the car, but it didn't destroy the car. You wouldn't want to drive it, I don't think. But, you know, it's and you wouldn't want to be right underneath it when it hit. But the odds of actually getting hit by a meteorite are pretty slim. I tell people if you're really worried about being killed by a meteorite, there are two things that can extend your life. Number one, don't smoke. And number two, wear your seatbelt. Because those things are so much more important than worrying about a meteorite.
Although we have heard about a meteorite, which is expected to come close to the Earth, about 30 years?
There are a number of asteroids that we're beginning to discover that come close to the Earth, big enough that we can see them with telescopes, and far enough away that if we can calculate they're going to hit, we might have time to do something about it. It would take 50 or 100 years to really alter a path enough. But if we had a 50 or 100 year time scan, it would be worth doing. The other interesting thing we get out of meteorites, most of these come from the asteroid belt, that area beyond Mars, between Mars and Jupiter. But some meteorites come from planets. We can tell because their chemistry is completely different. Even though we see them fall from the sky, their chemistry is not 4.5 billion years old, but much younger. They'll be oxidized, and some of them even have gas trapped in them that tell us the planet they come from. And over here we have some examples. These two meteorites come from the moon, and we know they come from the moon because their chemistry is identical to this piece of rock, which is one that one of the astronauts brought back from the moon. Since we've been to the moon, we know what the moon's made out of. We've been there. These, we're pretty confident, come from planet Mars.
Which ones?
The ones in the middle here, Chassigny, Nacla, Sailungamir 005.
How do you know they come from Mars?
Their chemistry tells us they're very young, which means they come from a planet bigger than the moon because the rocks are younger than the moon. Their chemistry tells us they come from a planet with an atmosphere, and in some samples they've actually had the atmosphere trapped inside, and the atmosphere exactly matches the atmosphere of Mars.
But why would a planet be spewing off some of these pieces of rocks or what turn into meteorites?
Well, you know, it's fascinating. The theorists proved that it couldn't happen because Mars was too big. It would be impossible to get pieces off. And then we got these rocks, and they just have to come from Mars. So the theorists go back, and there's a wonderful principle of science that says if it did happen, it can happen. So once they knew it could happen, they went and altered their theories a little bit. It's still very controversial. There are two big ideas. One would they be that a big meteorite, that like the one that made the meteor crater in Arizona, mm-hmm. may have hit Mars, and the shock of that bouncing off of the core mantle boundary or the mantle crust boundary on Mars would give enough energy to fling a rock off. Maybe not. The other idea is we know that buried underneath the surface of Mars, you can't see it on the surface, but underneath, are large deposits of water ice. If a rock like what made Meteor Crater hit Mars and vaporized that water, turned it into steam, it's conceivable that that explosion of steam could give some rocks enough energy to fling them off of Mars and into space. Maybe. Both of these are still controversial. But however it happened, we know it did happen. And that right there is a big advance.
Jesuit brother Guy Consolomagno is curator of the Vatican Observatory's meteorite collection, just a small part of the observatory's activities and centuries-long papal interest in the scientific study of the universe.